So hi and welcome to the Movies You Love podcast. It's a podcast where I get to sit down and talk with a bunch of individuals who all love movies, and I just said the worst thing possible because my brain is in mush right now. It's a week to stiff. I've been doing nothing but thinking about it. I just made my selections. I just quit my job and I'm doing podcasts. I don't know what's going to happen with me right now. I'm panicking, but you know what? I really shouldn't be doing this right now. I should be doing the proper intro. But don't worry about me, guys. I'm going to be okay, in case any of you were worried. I don't know why you would be. Are any of you worried? That would be amazing if someone out there was worried. But regardless, this is the Movies You Love podcast, which I mentioned already. And this week, I get to sit down with Amy Ratcliffe. She writes for websites such as geekwithcurves.com. She writes for websites such as geekwithcurves.com, IGN, Fashionably Geek, as well as StarWars.com. She is... like, I didn't know what to expect because she's someone who I didn't really interact with that much online until, like, I just sent out the email going, like, hey, you want to do this? Because I really, like, I enjoy her writing, but I've never, as I mentioned, never had, like, proper contact between her until this. And turns out, like, a really cool person. We get to talk about Tombstone, the 1993 Western, where I do purposefully mention a lot of lines that I love, like, throughout the podcast. I would put them here again, but I think that would be redundant and horrendous and horrible, and a couple other bad words that really shouldn't be done with these things. But anyways, I think I'm rambling, and I'm doing this intro really long, so I'm gonna end it right here. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Go!
Son of a bitch, damn Billy, just settle down.
Shut up. Take your money and get out, because I'm tired of listening to your mouth.
Why, Ann Bailey?
Are we cross? Them guns don't scare me. Because without them guns, you ain't nothing but a skinny lunger.
Ann, what an ugly thing to say. Poor ugliness. Does this mean we're not friends anymore?
You know, Ed, if I thought you weren't my friend, I just don't think I could bear it. We can be friends again.
So, Amy, you chose for us to sit down and talk about the 1993 film Tombstone, which gives us what I like to call the Battle of the Mustaches.
That is an accurate assessment.
I'm going to start where I always start with all these conversations. I want to know, like, tell me about the first time you actually saw this film. Like, how did it play for you? What was the setting? Give me a picture.
So, in hindsight, I was way too young to see this movie, I think, because I saw it in theaters in 1993. I remember I went with my parents and my aunt and uncle, which is just unusual in and of itself, because I don't remember any other experience where I went to the theater with my aunt and uncle and my parents, maybe only one or two other times. I think my uncle was just really into the Western aspect, and somehow we all ended up going, but I was only 12. So I think it's probably kind of an intense movie for a 12-year-old, but it made an impression. But I remember it's just this, you know, the local theater. I'm from a very small rural town, so the local theater was like a half an hour drive, and it was not anything fancy at all. It was very much one of those, you know, I don't even know how common stadium seating was then, but we didn't have that. And, you know, the chairs were rickety and uncomfortable, and the floor was always sticky, but it was what was close by. So, and I remember being fascinated by Wyatt Earp and learning that, you know, he was a real historical figure, and that seeing the movie, I don't remember the violence bugging me at all. I remember then thinking that Val Kilmer, even though I didn't really know his name at the time, that he was amazing, and I loved Doc Holliday, and I cried at the end. And after the movie, and after realizing Wyatt Earp was an actual character, I was inspired to go and learn more about him. And I think any book report or anything I wrote that year for school was all about Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday.
Because, of course, he's your Huckleberry.
That's why.
I think I would be remiss if I didn't fit that line in quickly. but I'm sorry, in case if you mentioned it. How old were you at the time when you saw this?
I was 12.
You were 12. And the theater didn't bug your uncle to let you into Tombstone at that age?
No, the theater was pretty. I don't think they paid a lot of attention. So, yeah, I'm not sure how I snuck in. And when I was thinking about this, because I've watched it God knows how many times since then, and obviously as I got older, understood a lot more of it. But I'm like, wow, I really shouldn't have seen that movie when I saw it. Somebody should have been paying attention to that. But nope, apparently not.
So, like, you mentioned that part of the reason why you ended up seeing this movie was that your uncle, he was quite into the Westerns, and you became quite a big fan of Wyatt Earp. Did that eventually translate into the whole Western genre?
Yes and no. I know that a couple of years after I saw it, I hunted down Gunfight at the OK Corral with, Burt Lancaster, I believe, and Kirk Douglas. And really enjoyed that. And I tried to watch some John Wayne, but of all, I just couldn't get into his Westerns and ended up liking Hatari. Is my favorite movie I watched of his. And I couldn't really get into any other Westerns. I read some Louis L'Amour books, because I was like a Western. If I don't like the movies, I can't get into the movies. Maybe I'll like some books. And my grandma had a whole collection of Louis L'Amour books that I read some of, but, you know, I never found a greater appreciation for Westerns because of it. Which, to my uncle's disappointment, I'm sure.
No, you didn't dive into the John Ford Westerns. You didn't get into Stagecoach and the Fort Apache and all of those wonderful little things.
No, but I feel like now that I'm older and can kind of appreciate it more, because I think at that, you know, when I was a teenager, if it wasn't a newer movie, I'm like, oh, this is the effects, the sets, like I can't handle this old style stuff. Cause you're a teenager and you think of everything and that the newest and coolest or the new stuff is the coolest stuff. But now that I've got some years on me, I think I would appreciate going back and watching, giving those Westerns another try. One of these days.
One of these days. I recommend heavily going into the John Ford side of things early. Like, definitely try The Searchers if you haven't gone there yet. That movie is quite special. But anyways, talking about a movie that's entirely about Wyatt Earp, and coming from the perspective of someone who has no true historical knowledge of Wyatt Earp that wasn't given to me through Tombstone, it felt kind of weird watching the movie because it feels like a very divided character. He has this romantic side to him and a completely lawful side, revenge side to him, vindictive even. It's kind of weird trying to consolidate that into one human being. I have no clue as to how true to life that was, if at all, and I'm pretty sure that you can answer this question really easily. But before you get to the actual true to life elements of it, how is it that Wyatt Earp in this movie kind of changed you in how you viewed movies before you view characters, or is it the other way around for you?
It was kind of movies, because it's really the first movie I remember, you know, I know I saw Little Mermaid in theaters when I was younger and Lion King, but it's the first movie that really kind of grabbed hold of me. And that was the first movie that, you know, I wanted to own as soon as it came out, however inappropriate it was for a kid that age to own it. And as I grew up, you know, teenage years, like the first movie I watched over and over. And I think it made such an impression. You know, it's hard to look back on this and remember what it was now, what it was then, because now it's, I recognize that the dialogue is pretty cheesy in a lot of parts, but that the acting is just really great and sells it to the point where you kind of forget that they're talking, that they have some ridiculous lines. But then I think it was the acting for sure. I remember being so impressed by, like I said, Val Kilmer and Kurt Russell, and the storytelling and also the visuals. I don't remember before that time seeing a movie that was just, it just felt very vivid and rich. And I really liked that even though it was a desert setting, it was so colorful. And seeing Wyatt Earp go from this kind of, you know, role into town and being hesitant about taking on any lawful duties. He doesn't want to be a marshal anymore. He wants to have a quiet life, and seeing how the presence of cowboys changed him and morphed him into this, you know, by the end, the Jedi would not approve. He would, because he follows that path of vengeance to wipe them all out. So even then, like watching that transformation, definitely grabbed my attention. I don't think I'd noticed quite that level of care. Like, I know that I'd watched characters develop and change like that, but I don't think it ever sunk into me before until I saw Tombstone that, oh, this is how character development, this is how people change, and this is how writers movies explore. So I don't know if that rambling all made sense, but kind of my first movie to really dig into and tear apart and watch over and over again. And it taught me a lot about characters.
So after you kind of went into a Wyatt Earp moment of your life, as you mentioned previously, like, did you find it difficult or easy to kind of take what you're learning in your readings and put it against Kurt Russell in this movie?
Well, the unfortunate thing is that wider phase where I did reports was a very long time ago, and I have a pretty awful memory. But I do remember, so I don't remember like many specifics about Wyatt's life anymore. But I remember that there were grains of truth and kernels of truth, and that it was obviously heavily dramatized. But it always seemed to me that when I was reading about Wyatt that he was more stoic in real life than he was certainly portrayed to be in the movies. So in that regard, I like the movie version better, because, you know, in real life too, though he did have that, I don't know if he was as romantic, but he did have that love affair that's portrayed in the movies, you know, with some, how much of that is dramatized. So he did have the passion in real life, but I think he was more all controlled and more held in. So I really liked Kurt Russell's portrayal, even if it wasn't historically accurate or written historically accurate. I liked the passion he brought to the character. I think he was a lot of fun in that movie, and scary sometimes.
You're telling me Wyatt Earp never shouted to someone that he called on the thunder?
I don't know. I kind of hope that he did, but I don't remember reading that. I also kind of hope Wyatt Earp did the bit when Kurt Russell, when he's going after the cowboys and announces his vengeance and is the whole, you tell him I'm coming and that hell is coming with me. So I don't know if that happened, but I kind of did.
So I kind of already mentioned the fact that this movie, within the whole Western genre, it seemed a little bit off kilter, because it does two things which most Westerns generally only do one of, which is that they have the hard as nails stoic hero going on a spit of vengeance, or we have the very romantic cowboy who is kind of trying to find an easy life in this world. In this movie, it almost splits it right down the middle with Wyatt Earp. I'm kind of curious if you ever leaned towards one side
like
or the other.
Yeah, right down, like as far as the movie's running. That's a trick, because the vengeance part at the end is so fun. It's horrible to say that death is fun, but it's really entertaining and it really grabbed me. And the images of Wyatt Earp and his band riding across the plains are just chasing down cowboys are so, it's so vivid in my head. But I you know, I like the romantic side because I'm a romantic, and even though it was wrong, you kind of end up rooting for Dana Delaney's character. So, and I liked seeing that, you know, he did break. And if the cowboys wouldn't have been down, you know, maybe he would have led a peaceful life from there on. And well, I don't believe that. I think that even though he wanted a break, that he was also kind of just waiting for a reason to get back into marshalling. So I don't know how long it really would have lasted. But I like the side of him that, you know, that meets this mysterious woman who is a lot of fun, has this spark, and that he's curious about that and hasn't experienced a lot of it before or been around people who are at least were willing to talk about, you know, the things they want, like room service forever. So that side of him is just charming, and you don't see cowboys and westerns talk a lot like that, the way he acted with I keep wanting to, I just completely spacing on her name right now. Wow, Josie. And I really like their interaction.
Josephine.
No, is it Josie?
Josephine,
thank you. Okay. Yeah. I keep wanting to I've been watching Superman, so now Dana Delaney is just Lois to me in the animated series. I'm like, Lois was not her name in Tombstone. It's hard, but I have to go with the more romantic, softer, Wyatt Earp. Though I still enjoy the second half of the movie, it's nice to see him kind of laid back and trying to enjoy his family for the brief amount of time that it lasts.
You bring up how you kind of question whether he was just waiting for that excuse. And I mean, it's really easy to kind of come around to that when you realize that he has the biggest gun that ever existed just sitting in his drawer waiting for him to go and pick it up. That peacemaker just looks massive.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't let that get dusty. And I think that is some of his personality, for sure, that he's just kind of got that in him, that he will always right the wrongs, even if he tries to take a break.
So, with this movie I think now it's its 2-decade anniversary. You mentioned how repeatedly you've viewed this movie. Like, how has this movie changed for you throughout the years from 12 years old to today?
Definitely a lot. I've really grown to appreciate, you know, as I saw more movies, and more about Kummer movies specifically, I would just keep talking about him because I love him so very much as Doc Holliday. And, it's a close match with his role in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, but I believe it is one of his best roles. So as I saw more Val Kilmer movies, I really came to appreciate his performance, more over the years. And, like I said, as I've gotten older, I think the last time I watched this movie was just in late June. I had a friend over who also loves it, and you kind of, it's taken me until, you know, 12, now I'm 32 to realize that, like I said, that you have to admit the dialogue is, if you just read it straight, if you just read a script, the dialogue's pretty cheesy in parts, but noticing that has made me appreciate the acting more. Michael, I'm going to miss his last name, but, Bean, whoever,
Michael
the guy that plays
Bean?
John, Bean, yes, who plays Johnny Ringo. He's also, you know, as a main character in this, but wow, he makes every moment of his on screen memorable. And the interaction between him and Doc Holliday throughout, especially their kind of last battle where Doc Holliday gets rid of him and tricks him, is just, it's so good. And, you know, when I was younger, I couldn't appreciate the subtleties in any of that. It was just, wow, they're like riding horses and killing people and there's a love story. But over the years, I've become more appreciative of the nuances. And the cinematography of, I don't know how many people would agree, but I think it's just a beautiful film and very striking. I mean, it gets you right from the beginning when they have the massacre at the wedding. And I just don't remember. I don't think I've seen another film that looks quite the same way. Like the palette is just rich and the shots are set up really quite lovely. So I've come to appreciate the little things over the years rather than just the, hey, it's an action movie with fun dialogue and death.
I mean, the acting, it definitely is kind of, it's not so much the acting, but the writing is definitely kind of iffy here and there. But the thing about it is with me that watching this movie is that sometimes while, people like Val Kilmer and Michael Biehn are quite amazing in their bits, I feel like I almost always want to gravitate towards the much bigger roles. I mean, nothing in my mind beats Powers Booth howling at the moon, shooting up the entire town as Curly Bill in this movie. Or even, as we've already mentioned, Kurt Russell talking about how they called on the thunder and he's coming for them. Those kind of moments just stick with me as things that I'd love to just have a soundbite and just be able to just have it on my iPod and just listen to it repeatedly throughout the day. Just like, yeah, Kurt Russell, you're going to do some good stuff really soon. You bring up the cinematography, and the greatest thing about this movie is how the visuals are evocative of what Westerns came before it. I mean, you mentioned the massacre in the opening scene. That kind of reminds me a lot of Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in the West, which they opened up with a big massacre scene. There's the moment of the Earp family kind of coming towards Tombstone, and they have this kind of backdrop shot with the big orange sundown, and you see the carriages going across, and it kind of reminds me a lot of why am I blanking on the name, Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven, which we're going to be seeing a remake of very soon, and where throughout the rest of the movie is kind of evocative of things like Shane and all of these classic Westerns, which it kind of makes sense in a movie like this. The class of Western cinema has always been here all around the place. I mean, but with this movie, I've mentioned how it kind of just kind of throws a broad net over everything into a really lovely tone. But then again, there are people out there, and I did a little reading to some of the people who were writing about this movie back in 93, who kind of didn't really feel so kindly towards this movie, kind of pushed it down to the point of saying, yeah, it's kind of like a TV Western where they don't really want to do one thing right. They want to do 20 things and it's not quite sure. Do you kind of feel like this movie doesn't quite have a focus, if at all? Because, I mean, there's so many characters to look at throughout this movie.
I can definitely see that point of view. And I will be the first person to admit that I don't think Tombstone is the best movie ever made. I know it has its flaws, but I still love it dearly. But that is one of them, is there's a lot happening. There's a lot of primary stories and side stories you have to chase. And because of it, you come away with like people like me who remember that Doc Holliday is the best thing ever. And who, I mean, I didn't forget about Wyatt Earp. Right? I feel like if the story would have been a little more streamlined, be the way around, like that Wyatt Earp, Kurt Russell is the best thing ever, and oh, by the way, Doc Holliday was great. So because of the way they layered those stories and the side stories and then the vengeance, and the romance, I definitely feel like it's kind of all over the place. I can't defend that.
I mean, we haven't even gotten around to mentioning that Billy Zane is in this movie as the actor.
Oh, that's right. Man, I didn't know who he was then, and I had the biggest crush on him. That is the prettiest man I have ever seen.
I have to admit, as a young individual, probably around this time, I don't remember exactly when this movie was released, but I was a big fan of Billy Zane, if only for the movie Phantom. And I know it's a horrible movie, but I was young and stupid.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet. I want to, though, because I'm curious, because it's Phantom, but...
It's so bad. It's so bad. I mean, if anything else, we got Titanic out of him, so you know, and
that's what
better.
I mean, yeah.
Zoolander, that one role, that one scene for him in Zoolander, perfect.
Pretty fabulous.
I'm really kind of sad that Billy Zane really isn't a thing anymore. I really liked him for a long while.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the last thing he's done, and I can't. Yeah, I don't remember, but man, I think he can play a really good villain. He needs to do more of that.
I mean, it's kind of weird that Billy Zane is something that's sort of fizzled, but Michael Biehn is still around, because I mean, and the thing about Michael Biehn is he still stays within these niche groups of geekdom. I mean, he kind of has always gravitated towards his Terminator role. I mean, I don't know if you're like a really big gaming individual, but there's this Far Cry mod which just was released where he did the voice for something which was basically just his Terminator role again.
Hey, if it's working for you.
So coming back to Tombstone and coming back to your relationship with the film, I'm curious because it's something that I've heard a lot doing this series of podcasts with people talking about movies that they love, talking about movies that they got introduced to, and they tend to be introduced to through older members of their family. I'm kind of curious, has this like been that kind of movie for you and your uncle? Like, is it still that kind of movie today for you and your uncle?
Well, he actually unfortunately passed away a couple years ago. And we fell out of touch a little after I moved away from home. But when I was still living, I used to live, you know, like 20 yards from his house, basically right next door. And it is something we couldn't bond over a lot of things, but I knew that if I asked about Tombstone, that would at least get him talking about Westerns or movies that he liked. And, talking more than we would have probably otherwise, and you know, having something to actually talk about that wasn't just the weather or, you know, just family news. And he also, it's a random side story, but I was in 4-H when I was younger, which is a program where you kind of join a club and it teaches you, like, you take care of like a livestock type animal, and I had lambs. He always helped me take care of lambs. So when we were training, or when we were walking the lambs or giving them baths or whatever, I could talk to him about, you know, if not Tombstone, I could ask him about what was his favorite John Wayne movie, or, you know, it opens up another door to conversation for us that wasn't previously open. So it was very cool.
That's always the best part of cinema, kind of opening up a conversation between people, and that's really good. I'm sorry to hear about his passing. But how is it, we've already talked about your relationship with Westerns, and weirdly enough, this movie didn't quite spurn on that relationship, but in relation to movies in general, like, what was it that you then started to look for in movies after seeing this?
After, this is a silly thing, but I recognized so many people from Tombstone and later movies. That was kind of one of the first movies that, you know, when I saw Titanic, like 4 or 5 years later, I was like, oh, that guy was in Tombstone. That started kind of connecting the dots because so many people show up in Tombstone. I mean, Bill Paxton and Sam Elliott and on and on. But it made me realize that grown-up movies were pretty darn cool, which is probably not an effect my parents were happy with when I was only 12. If anything, it made me stay up late and watch more movies on television that I probably shouldn't have. I know that I watched, I don't remember when Flatliners came out, but I know that when it was on, or I rented it, I could get away with renting a lot at a local video store because it was a small town. And I'm pretty sure, my memory is a little fuzzy, but I don't think they cared if I rented R-rated movies, even if I was, you know, not of an age. So I remember watching Flatliners when I was pretty young and just like seeking out movies that were not Disney movies so I could watch more like what the grown-ups watch. And at that time, it was because it was cool. It was also because Tombstone was, I really enjoyed it and liked it. But I know I didn't fully understand everything that was happening. So in hindsight, I seeked out other movies because this is the grown-up thing to do. This is fun. They were automatically better than any Disney movie I had in my collection or any PG movie. But later, as I, you know, gained more of an understanding that wasn't just about watching movies that I wasn't probably supposed to be watching, even though it's not the best movie, it just kind of hit the bar. Like, if I watch something, I'm like, oh, if I didn't like it, I'm like, oh, this wasn't as good as Tombstone. And I think that didn't get surpassed until I finally saw Star Wars, which I didn't see it for the first time until it came out with the re-releases, the special editions, and theaters. But to get back to your question, it made me kind of more aware of that there were bigger stories out there than just my hour and a half animated cartoons that I really, the only thing I remember a lot about watching before I was 12. So it made me seek out new paths, new civilizations, and just new movies, basically. It got me out of my my one trick. What's the word I'm looking for? The phrase. I don't know. It broke me out of my cycle.
Part of me was ready to kind of just eke in My Little Pony.
I do like My Little Pony.
Oh, that's so wonderful. I'm kind of curious because as someone who lived in a household where I was very restricted as a teenager, not just a child, as to what kind of movies I was able to watch, was there a change in your perspective of these R-rated films you were watching very young when you grew up, where you wish you didn't get to see them at that time so that you could kind of gain a better appreciation for what they were doing as opposed to just the visceral interaction you got with them?
Absolutely. And I know in one case, like it was on television, Stephen King's It, and I watched that and had nightmares for months, and still I refuse now to watch Stephen King movie or pick up a Stephen King book because I watched it too young. So in that case, it was definitely an experience that I wish I would not have had. And I was of an appropriate age, because saying it's garbage for life is very dramatic, but definitely, like I said, I won't touch Stephen King because I was so scared and had such vivid nightmares. And like when I saw Flatliners for the first time, I don't remember how old I was. I know I wasn't very old. And that one sticks out of my mind because that one scared me a little too. But I couldn't appreciate what was going on. So with like any of these movies that I saw in that time period, like I just have to go back and rewatch anyway, because I don't either remember it fully, or I know that when I watched it the first time, I had no clue of the full depth of the story. There was no way I possibly could, because I didn't have any kind of context or life experience to understand what was happening. So there are some, probably most of them, I would have rather have waited till I was, you know, at least in my mid to late teens, so I could have enjoyed them better the first time. But by the same token, because I have such a shaky memory, you know, rewatching a lot of that stuff now is kind of, it's kind of like watching it for the first time. And not just because I don't remember, but also because I'm older and have a different way of looking at it. So that's one of the really cool things about movies, is that even if you've seen them in your childhood or as a teenager, or you've seen them a few times, you can watch movies somewhere in the neighborhood of probably 5 to 10 times and still learn new things about them, or you've had a different life experience the last time you saw it, so you can appreciate some facet of it in a new way that you couldn't have before. And you probably do hit a point. Like, I think I'm at a point with Tombstone maybe now, and that I've sucked everything I can out of that movie. But other movies like Star Wars, or that's the best example top of my head, I can, you know, watch over and over and kind of still pull new thoughts or new feelings from it. So that was a long rambling answer to your question, but yeah, I wish I would have.
Never worry about rambling. Rambling is wonderful. I'm kind of curious for you, like when you get to introduce this movie to people who probably have never seen it, like, is there anything specific that you hope that they're able to just kind of latch on to immediately to get into the movie, as opposed to like the general idea of itself?
I usually just hope that they won't be turned off by the fact that it's a Western. Because so many people, not so many, but it seems like enough people are dead set against Westerns that, that they are biased before they even start watching it. So if I can get people to watch it, I think that's a success, first of all. And I want them to just like the characters. That's what I hope they enjoy. I hope they get into it and I can recognize that, yeah, it might be a little silly at parts, but that it's a lot of fun. It's very well acted. I hope they can connect to somebody, be it Wyatt Earp or be it Doc Holliday, and they can latch on and have a good time watching that.
That's understandable. I mean, movies are things that we want to love, and we want everyone else to love. Like, I feel that's the weirdest thing for people to understand sometimes when they realize that someone might write about movies, like, generally, they'll be like, so you kind of just want to hate. No, we don't want to hate movies. We want to like them. We want to like every single one of them. Sadly, it doesn't work out that way, but it just ends up really. Like, there's nothing I enjoy more than being like, hey, this is nothing but just 90 minutes of unadulterated happiness. Please enjoy it.
Yes, I would much prefer that be the case than have to. I have to say why I don't like a movie.
One last thing before we go, and I'm kind of curious about this, because as movies change in our mind over the years, I'm kind of curious to wonder a hypothetical, which is, could you imagine a moment where today is the first day that you're actually ever seeing Tombstone, and there was another movie down there in your history that triggered, probably Star Wars, the way you talk about it, triggered your love for movies. Do you imagine that there would be anything specific that you would be more critical of Tombstone if it was a movie that you saw for the first time today?
Oh, the dialogue, for sure. In some places, it's just, I mean, like, you have lines like, bring down the thunder, and I still contest I'm Your Huckleberry is brilliant. But in the context, like, who says that? Who has ever said that in history? Probably nobody. I don't think it was ever a thing.
I still don't know exactly what a huckleberry is.
I don't know either, but it's a great line, and it's, if you mention Tombstone to anybody, it's the first thing they say. So well done, writers, because it stuck. But I think that I would definitely be less forgiving of the dialogue than I am now, because I watched it for so long. It definitely has its weak spots there. I'm trying to think if there'd be anything else, though. I think everything else is held up pretty well, honestly. So yeah, so the writing in some places, the dialogue specifically.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Amy, for coming in and talking with me.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun. Now I'm going to go watch Tombstone again.
So that was the podcast. I'd like to thank everyone for listening. Just as a side note, the podcast will be taking a short hiatus, with me heading off to TIFF, and even though this being a bi-weekly podcast, you'd have thought that I would have been able to plan episodes to be done in advance to come up while I'm at TIFF. Sadly, I have not. And due to the scheduling nature of this show, I'm not going to promise anything for the month of September following this episode. So look for more episodes out in October. Who knows, it'll give me enough time to think of a whole new way to go about doing this show. And it might turn out really good because this is the 13th episode. I have to think about that. 13 episodes I've done of this podcast. And I'm really in love with it, guys. I hope you are too. Which reminds me, if you like this podcast, if you're listening to this podcast, if you don't like this podcast and you're listening to it, go over to iTunes, go subscribe, go over to, well, if you don't like it, I don't know why you would subscribe. Go over to Stitcher, go give it a listen, and go give it a rating or review over on iTunes. You can also leave a comment on the post. Just let me know what you think of the episode, think of the show, because feedback is always admired, it's always loved. You can follow me on Twitter at gmanreviews. You can find all of these podcasts as well as my other podcast, the Unnamed Movie Podcast, over at gmanreviews.com. So go listen to those. And as I kind of mentioned at the top of the episode, I'm going to be at TIFF, so you can go and read all of my writings over on gmanreviews.com, and I'm going to be doing daily dispatches for screeninvasion.com while I'm there, so you can go check that website as well. But I'll be posting links throughout the festival. I'm excited. It's my second year going, and I can't wait to get back into Toronto and go say hey to all of these people again. But yeah, thanks for listening, and good night.